after a round of police questioning, causing a media firestorm that should concern every American who cares about privacy rights. And then I remember, Mikhail Powers is gay. He came out when I was in junior high, and it was a big deal because it happened after some photos of him kissing a guy circulated online. It wasn't his choice. And from the way he's covering the story now, he's still bitter. Because suddenly the Bayview police are the bad guys. They have no evidence. They've disrupted our lives, and they've violated Cooper's constitutional rights. They're on the defensive as a police spokesperson claims they were careful in their questioning, and no leaks came from the department. But the ACLU wants to get involved now, and there's Eli Klinefelter from Until Proven Again, talking about how poorly this case has been handled from the beginning, with the four of us made into scapegoats, while nobody even asks who else might have wanted Simon Kelleher dead. "Has everybody forgotten about the teacher?" he asks, leaning forward from behind an overflowing desk. "He's the only person who was in that room who's being treated as a witness instead of a suspect, even though he had more opportunity than anyone. That can't be discounted." Maeve leans her head next to mine and whispers, "You should be working for Until Proven, Bronwyn." Mikhail switches to the next segment. "Will the real Simon Kelleher please stand up?" Simon's class picture flashes across the screen as people reminisce about his good grades and nice family and all the clubs he belonged to. Then Leah Jackson pops up on screen, standing on Bayview High's front lawn. I turn to Maeve, eyes wide, and she looks equally shocked. "She did it," she murmurs. "She actually did it." Leah's interview is followed by segments with other kids hurt by Simon's gossip, including Aiden Wu and a girl whose parents kicked her out when news spread about her being pregnant. Maeve's hand finds mine as Mikhail drops his last bombshell, a screen capture of the 4chan discussion threads, with Simon's worst posts about the Orange County school shooting highlighted. "Look, I support the notion of violently disrupting schools in theory, but this kid showed a depressing lack of imagination. I mean, it was fine, I guess. It got the job done. But it was so prosaic. Haven't we seen this 100 times now? Kid shoots up school, shoots up self, film at 11. Raise the stakes, for God's sake. Do something original. A grenade, maybe. Samurai swords? Surprise me when you take out a bunch of asshole lemmings. That's all I'm asking." I think back to Maeve texting away that day Janae got so upset with her at lunch. "So you really did send that to the show?" I whisper. "I really did," she whispers back. "I didn't know they'd use them, though. Nobody ever got back to me." By the time the broadcast finishes, the Bayview police are the real villains, followed closely by Simon. Addie, Nate, and I are innocent bystanders caught in a crossfire we don't deserve, and Cooper's a saint. The whole thing's a stunning reversal. I'm not sure you could call it journalism, but Mikhail Powers Investigates definitely has an impact over the next few days. Somebody starts a Change.org petition to drop the investigation that collects almost 20,000 signatures. The MLB and local colleges get heat about whether they discriminate against gay players. The tone of the media coverage shifts, with more questions being raised about the police's handling of the case than about us. And when I return to school on Monday, people actually talk to me again. Even Evan Neiman, who's been acting like we've never met, sidles up to me at the last bell and asks if I'm going to mathlete practice. Maybe my life won't ever be fully normal again, but by the end of the week, I start to hope it'll be less criminal. Friday night, I'm on the phone with Nate, as usual, reading him the latest Tumblr post. Even that seems like it's about to give up. Being accused of murder is turning into a monumental drag. I mean, sure, the TV coverage is interesting, and it makes me feel good that the smokescreen I put in place is working. People still have no clue who's responsible for killing Simon. Nate cuts me off after the first paragraph. Sorry, but we have more important things to discuss. Answer this honestly. If I'm no longer a murder suspect, will you still find me attractive? You'll still be on probation for drug dealing, I point out. That's pretty hot.
Ah, but that's up in December, Nate replies. By the new year, I could be a model citizen. Your parents might even let me take you out on an actual date, if you wanted to go.
If I wanted to go. Nate, I've been waiting to go on a date with you since fifth grade, I tell him. I like that he wonders what we'll be like outside this weird bubble. Maybe if we're both thinking about it, there's a possibility we'll figure it out. He tells me about his latest visit with his mother, who really seems to be trying. We watch a movie together, his choice, unfortunately, and I fall asleep to his voice criticizing the shoddy camera work. When I wake up Saturday morning, I notice my phone has only a few minutes left. I'll have to ask him for another one, which will be phone number 4, I think. Maybe we can use our actual phones one of these days. I stay in bed a little later than usual, right up till the time I need to get moving if Maeve and I are going to do our usual running-slash-library routine. I've just finished lacing up my sneakers and I'm rooting around in my dresser for my Nano when a tentative knock sounds on my bedroom door. Come in, I say, unearthing a small blue device from a pile of headbands. Is that you, Maeve? Are you the reason this is only 10% charged? I turn around to see my sister, so white-faced and trembling that I almost drop my Nano. Anytime Maeve looks sick, I'm seized with the horrible fear she's had a relapse. Do you feel all right? I ask anxiously. I'm fine. The words come out as a gasp. But you need to see something. Come downstairs, okay? What's going on? Just come. Maeve's voice is so brittle that my heart thumps painfully. She clutches the banister all the way downstairs. I'm about to ask if something's wrong with Mom or Dad when she leads me into the living room and points mutely at the television, where I see Nate in handcuffs, being led away from his house, with the words "arrest in the Simon Kelleher murder case" scrolling on the bottom of the screen. Chapter 25. Bronwyn. Saturday, November 3rd, 10:17 a.m. This time, I do drop my Nano. It slips from my hand and thuds softly onto our rug as I watch one of the police officers flanking Nate open the cruiser door and push him, not very gently, into the back seat. The scene cuts to a reporter standing outdoors, brushing windswept dark hair out of her face. Bayview police refuse to comment other than to say that new evidence provides probable cause to charge Nate McCauley, the only one of the Bayview 4 with a criminal record, with Simon Kelleher's murder. We'll continue to provide updates as the story unfolds. I'm Liz Rosen, reporting from Channel 7 News. Maeve stands next to me, the remote in her hand. I pluck at her sleeve. Can you rewind to the beginning, please? She does, and I study Nate's face in the looping video. His expression is blank, almost bored, as though he's been talked into going to a party that doesn't interest him. I know that look. It's the same one he got when I mentioned Until Proven at the mall. He's shutting down and putting up defenses. There's no trace of the boy I know from the phone, or our motorcycle rides, or my media room, or the one I remember from grade school, his St. Pius tie askew, and his shirt untucked, leading his sobbing mother down the hallway with a fierce look that dared any of us to laugh. I still believe that Nate's the real one,
Whatever the police think or found doesn't change that. My parents aren't home. I grab my phone and call my lawyer, Robin, who doesn't answer. I leave her such a long, rambling message that her voicemail cuts me off, and I hang up feeling helpless. Robin's my only hope for getting information, but she won't consider this an emergency. It's a problem for Nate's future lawyer, not her. That thought makes me even more panicked. What's an overworked public defender who's never met Nate going to be able to do? My eyes dart around the room and meet Maeve's troubled gaze.
Do you think he might have...
No, I say forcefully. Come on, Maeve. You've seen how screwed up this investigation is. They thought I did it for a while. They're wrong. I'm positive they're wrong.
I wonder what they found, though, Maeve says. You'd think they'd be pretty careful after all the bad press they got this week.
I don't answer. For once in my life, I have no idea what to do. My brain's empty of everything except a churning anxiety.
Channel 7 has given up pretending they know anything new, and they're replaying snippets about the investigation to date. There's footage from Mikhail Powers Investigates, Addie in her pixie haircut, giving whoever's filming her a defiant finger, a Bayview Police Department spokesperson, Eli Kleinfelter.
Of course. I grab my phone and search for Eli's name. He gave me his cell the last time we spoke and told me to call any time. I hope he meant it. He answers on the first ring.
Eli Kleinfelter.
Eli? It's Bronwyn Rojas from...
Of course. Hi, Bronwyn. I take it you're watching the news. What do you make of it?
They're wrong. I stare at the television while Maeve stares at me. Dread's creeping through me like a fast-growing vine, squeezing my heart and lungs so it's hard to breathe. Eli, Nate needs a better lawyer than whatever random public defender they all sign him. He needs somebody who gives a crap and knows what they're doing. I think, well, basically I think he needs you. Would you consider taking his case? Eli doesn't answer straight away, and when he does, his voice is cautious.
Bronwyn, you know I'm interested in this case, and I sympathize with all of you. You've gotten a shit deal, and I'm sure this arrest is more of the same. But I've got an impossible workload as it is.
Please! I interrupt, and words tumble out of me. I tell Eli about Nate's parents and how he's practically raised himself since he was in fifth grade. I tell him every awful, heart-wrenching story Nate's ever told me, or that I witnessed or guessed. Nate would hate it. But I've never believed anything more strongly than I believe he needs Eli to stay out of jail.
All right, Eli says finally. I get it, I really do. Are either of these parents in any shape to talk? I'll make time for a consult and give them some ideas for resources. That's all I can do.
It's not enough, but it's something. Yes, I say with brazen, fake confidence. Nate talked to his mother 2 days ago, and she was holding on, but I have no idea what effect today's news might have on her. I'll talk to Nate's mom. When can we meet?
10 tomorrow, our offices.
Maeve's still watching me when I hang up. Bronwyn, what are you doing? I snatch the keys to the Volvo from the kitchen island. I need to find Mrs. McCauley. Maeve bites her lip. Bronwyn, you can't run this like it's student council. She's right. I need help. Will you come, please? She debates for half a minute, her amber eyes steady on mine. All right. My phone almost slips out of my sweaty palm as we head for the car. I must have gotten a dozen calls and texts while I was talking with Eli. My parents... My friends and a bunch of numbers I don't recognize that probably belong to reporters. I have 4 messages from Addie, all some variation of, did you see? And WTF.
Are we telling Mom and Dad about this?
Maeve asks as I back out of the driveway.
What this? Nate's arrest? I'm pretty sure they're in the loop on that. This legal coordination you're doing. Do you disapprove? Not disapprove, exactly. But you're flying off the handle before you even know what the police found. It could be cut and dried. I know you really like him, but isn't it possible he did this?
No, I say shortly. And yes, I'll tell Mom and Dad. I'm not doing anything wrong, just trying to help a friend.
My voice sticks on the last word, and we drive in silence until we reach Motel 6. I'm relieved when the front desk clerk tells me Mrs. McCauley's still checked in, but she doesn't answer the phone in her room, which is a good sign. Hopefully she's wherever Nate is. I leave a note with my phone number and try not to overdo the underlines and capital letters. Maeve takes over driving responsibilities on the ride home while I call Addie.
What the hell?
She says when she picks up, and the vice gripping my chest loosens at the disbelief in her voice.
First they think it's all of us, then it's musical chairs till they finally land on Nate, I guess.
Anything new? I ask. I've been away from screens for half an hour. But there's nothing. The police are being tight-lipped about whatever they found. Addie's lawyer doesn't have a clue what's happening.
You want to hang out tonight? She asks.
You must be going nuts. My mom and her boyfriend have plans, so Ashton and I are making pizza.
Bring Maeve. We'll have a sister night.
Maybe, if things aren't too out of control, I say gratefully. Maeve turns into our street, and my heart sinks when I spy the line of white news vans in front of our house. It looks like Univision and Telemundo have joined the fray, which is seriously going to piss off my dad. He can never get them to cover anything positive about his company, but this they show up for. We pull into the driveway behind my parents' cars, and as soon as I open my door, a half dozen microphones are in my face. I push past them and meet Maeve in front of the car, grabbing her hand as we weave through the cameras and the flashing lights. Most of the reporters shout some variation of, "Bronwyn, do you think Nate killed Simon?" But one calls out, "Bronwyn, is it true you and Nate are romantically involved?" I really hope my parents weren't asked the same question. Maeve and I slam the door behind us and duck past the windows into our kitchen. Mom is sitting at the island with a coffee cup between both hands, her face tight with worry. Dad's voice rises in heated conversation from behind his closed office door.
"Bronwyn, we need to talk," Mom says,
and Maeve floats away upstairs. I sit across from my mother at the kitchen island and meet her tired eyes with a pang. My fault.
"Obviously, you saw the news," she says. "Your father's talking to Robin about what, if anything, this means for you. In the meantime, we got a lot of questions when we walked past that zoo out there, some about you and Nate."
I can tell she's trying hard to keep her voice neutral. "We might have made it difficult for you to talk about whatever relationships you have with the other kids, because, from our perspective, the best way to keep you safe was to keep you separate. So, maybe you didn't think you could confide in us, but I need you to be straight with me now that Nate's been arrested. Is there something I should know?" At first, all I can think is, what's the least amount of information I can provide and still make you understand I need to help Nate? But then she reaches out and squeezes my hand. And it hits me with a stab of guilt, how I never used to keep things from her until I cheated in chemistry. And look how that turned out. So I tell her almost everything. Not about bringing Nate to our house or meeting him at Bayview Estates, because I'm pretty sure that'll send us down a bad path. But I explain the late-night phone calls, the escape from school motorcycle rides, and, yeah, the kissing. My mother is trying so hard not to freak out. I give her a lot of credit.
So you're serious about him?
She almost chokes on the words. She doesn't want the real answer. Robin's answer a different question than the one you're trying to deflect strategy would work well now.
Mom, I understand this is a bizarre situation, and I don't really know Nate, but I don't believe he'd hurt Simon, and he doesn't have anybody looking out for him. He needs a good lawyer, so that's what I'm trying to help with. My phone buzzes with a number I don't recognize, and I grimace as I realize I need to answer, in case it's Mrs. McCauley.
Hi, this is Bronwyn.
Bronwyn, so glad you picked up. This is Lisa Jacoby with the Los Angeles Times. I hang up and face my mother again.
I'm sorry I haven't been straight with you after everything you've done for me. But please let me connect Mrs. McCauley and Eli, okay?
My mother massages her temple. Bronwyn, I'm not sure you understand how cavalier you've been. You ignored Robin's advice, and you're lucky it didn't blow up in your face. It still might. But no, I won't stop you from talking with Nate's mother. This case is messed up enough that everyone involved needs decent counsel. I throw my arms around her, and, God, it feels good to just hug my mom for a minute. She sighs when I let go. Let me talk to your father. I don't think a conversation between you two would be productive right now. I couldn't agree more. I'm on my way upstairs when my phone rings again, and my heart leaps when I see a 503 area code. I can't keep the hope out of my voice when I pick up. Hi, this is Bronwyn. Bronwyn, hello. The voice is low and strained, but clear. It's Ellen McCauley, Nate's mother. You left me a note.
Oh, thank God, thank God, thank God.
She didn't hightail it to Oregon in a drug-induced haze. Yes, yes, I did.
Cooper, Saturday, November 3rd, 3:15 p.m. It's hard to evaluate exhibition games anymore, but overall this one went pretty well. My fastball hit 94. I struck out the side twice, and only a few guys heckled me from the stands. They were wearing tutus and baseball caps, though, so they stood out a little more than your average gay basher before security escorted them out. A couple of college scouts showed up, and the guy from Cal State even bothered to talk to me afterward. Coach Ruffalo started hearing from teams again, but it strikes me as more of a PR play than genuine interest. Only Cal State is still talking scholarship, even though I'm pitching better than ever. That's life as an outed murder suspect, I guess. Pop doesn't wait for me outside the locker room anymore. He heads straight for the car when I'm done and starts the engine so we can make a quick exit. Reporters are another story. They're dying to talk to me. I brace myself when a camera lights up as I leave the locker room, waiting for the woman with the microphone to cycle through the usual half-dozen questions. But she catches me by surprise.
Cooper, what do you think about Nate McCauley's arrest?
Huh? I stop short, too shocked to brush past her, and Louise almost bumps into me.
You haven't heard?
The reporter grins like I handed her a winning lottery ticket.
Nate McCauley's been arrested for Simon Kelleher's murder, and the Bayview police are saying you're no longer a person of interest. Can you tell me how that feels?
Nope, I can't. Or won't. Same difference.
Excuse me.
The hell? Luis mutters once we're past the camera gauntlet. He pulls out his phone and swipes wildly as I spot my father's car.
Damn, she wasn't lying. Dude!
He stares at me with wide eyes.
You're off the hook!
Weird, but that hadn't even occurred to me till he said it. We're giving Luis a ride home, which is good since it cuts down the time Pop and I need to spend alone. Luis and I drop our bags in the back seat, and I climb into the passenger seat while Luis settles himself into the back. Pop's fiddling with the radio, trying to find a news station.
"They arrested that McCauley kid," he says with grim satisfaction. "I'll tell you what, they're going to have a peck of lawsuits on their hands when this is done, starting with me."
He slides his eyes to my left as I sit. That's Pop's new thing. He looks near me. He hasn't met my eyes once since I told him about Chris.
"Well, you had to figure it was Nate," Luis says calmly. Throws Nate right under the bus, like he hadn't been sitting with the guy at lunch all last week.
I don't know what to think. If I'd had to point a finger at someone when this all started, it would have been Nate, even though he'd acted genuinely desperate when he was searching for Simon's EpiPen.
He was the person I knew the least, and he was already a criminal, so it wasn't much of a stretch. But when the entire Bayview High cafeteria was ready to take me down like a pack of hyenas, Nate was the only person who said anything. I never thanked him, but I've thought a lot about how much worse school would have gotten if he'd brushed past me and let things snowball. My phone's filled with text messages, but the only ones I care about are a string from Chris. Other than a quick visit to warn Chris about the police and apologize for the oncoming media onslaught, I've barely seen him in the past couple of weeks. Even though people know about us, we haven't had a chance to be normal. I'm still not sure what that would even look like. I wish I could find out.
OMG, saw the news. This is good, right? Call when you can.
I text him back while half listening to Pop and Luis talk. After we drop Luis off, silence settles between me and my father. Dense as fog. I'm the first to break it.
So how'd I do?
Good. Looked good.
Bare minimum response, as usual lately. I try again. I talk to the scout from Cal State. He snorts.
Cal State? Not even top 10.
Right, I acknowledge. We catch sight of the news vans when we're halfway down our street.
God damn it, Pop mutters. Here we go again. Hope this was worth it.
What was worth it? He pulls around a news van, throws the gear shift into park, and yanks the key out of the ignition.
Your choice!
Anger flares inside me at both his words and how he spits them out without even looking at me.
None of this is a choice, I say.
But the noise outside swallows my words as he opens the door. The reporter gauntlet is thinner than usual, so I'm guessing most of them are at Bronwyn's. I follow Pop inside, where he immediately heads for the living room and turns on the TV. I'm supposed to do post-game stretching now, but my father hasn't bothered to remind me about my routine for a while. Nani's in the kitchen making buttered toast with brown sugar on top.
How is the game, darling?
Fantastic. I say heavily, collapsing into a chair. I pick up a stray quarter and spin it into a silvery blur across the kitchen table. I pitched great, but nobody cares. Now, now. She sits across from me with her toast and offers me a slice, but I push it back toward her.
Give it time. Do you remember what I told you in the hospital?
I shake my head.
Things will get worse before they get better. Well, they surely did get worse, and now there's nowhere to go but up.
She takes a bite, and I keep spinning the quarter until she swallows.
You should bring that boy of yours by sometime for dinner, Cooper. It's about time we met him.
I try to picture my father making conversation with Chris over chicken casserole. Pop would hate that.
Well, he'll have to get used to it, won't he?
Before I can answer her, my phone buzzes with a text from a number I don't recognize.
It's Bronwyn. I got your number from Addie. Can I call you?
Sure. My phone rings within seconds.
Hi, Cooper. You've heard about Nate?
Yeah. I'm not sure what else to say, but Bronwyn doesn't give me a chance.
I'm trying to set up a meeting with Nate's mom and Eli Kleinfelter from Until Proven. I'm hoping he'll take Nate's case. I was wondering, did you get a chance to ask Luis's brother about that red Camaro from the parking lot accident?
Luis called him last week about it. He was going to look into it, but I haven't heard back yet.
Would you mind checking in with him? Bronwyn asks.
I hesitate. Even though I haven't processed everything yet, there's this little ball of relief growing inside me. Because yesterday I was the police's number one guy, and today I'm not. I'd be lying if I said it didn't feel good. But this is Nate, who's not a friend exactly, or at all, I guess. But he's not nothing.
Yeah, okay, I tell Bronwyn.
Chapter 26. Bronwyn. Sunday, November 4th, 10 a.m. We are quite the crew at the Until Proven offices Sunday morning. Me, Mrs. McCauley, and my mom, who was willing to let me go, but not unsupervised. The small, sparsely furnished space is overflowing, with each desk holding at least two people. Everyone's either talking urgently on the phone or pounding away on a computer, sometimes both. Busy for a Sunday, I comment as Eli leads us into a tiny room crammed with a small table and chairs. Eli's hair seems to have grown 3 inches since he was on Mikhail Powers Investigates, all of it upward. He runs a hand through the mad scientist curls and sends them even higher. Is it Sunday already? There aren't enough chairs, so I sit on the floor. Sorry, Eli says. We can make this quick. First off, Mrs. McCauley, I'm sorry about your son's arrest. I understand he's been remanded to a juvenile detention center instead of an adult facility, which is good news. As I told Bronwyn, there's not much I can do given my current workload. But if you're willing to share whatever information you have, I'll do what I can to provide suggestions and maybe a referral. Mrs. McCauley looks exhausted, but like she's made an effort to dress up a little in navy pants and a lumpy gray cardigan. My own mother is her usual effortless chic in leggings, tall boots, a cashmere sweater coat, and a subtly patterned infinity scarf. The two of them couldn't be more different, and Mrs. McCauley tugs at the frayed hem of her sweater as though she knows it. Well, here's what I've been told, she says. The school received a call that Nate had drugs in his locker. From whom? Eli asks, scribbling on a yellow notepad. They wouldn't say. I think it was anonymous. But they went ahead and removed his lock Friday after school to check. They didn't find any drugs, but they did find a bag with Simon's water bottle and EpiPen, and all the EpiPens from the nurse's office that went missing the day he died. I run my fingers along the rough fiber of the rug, thinking of all the times Addie's been questioned about those pens. Cooper, too. They've been hanging over our heads for weeks. There's no way, even if Nate were actually guilty of something, that he'd be dumb enough to leave them sitting in his locker. Ah. Eli's voice comes out like a sigh, but his head stays bent over his legal pad. So the police got involved, and they got a warrant to search the house Saturday morning. Mrs. McCauley continues. And they found a computer in Nate's closet with this journal, I guess they're calling it. All those Tumblr posts that have been popping up everywhere since Simon died. I raise my eyes and catch my mother staring at me, a kind of disturbed pity crawling across her face. I hold her gaze and shake my head. I don't believe any of it. Ah. Eli says again. This time he does look up, but his face remains calm and neutral. Any fingerprints? No, Mrs. McCauley says, and I exhale quietly. What does Nate say about all this?
Eli asks. That he has no idea how any of these things got into his locker or the house, Mrs. McCauley says.
Okay, Eli says. And Nate's locker hadn't been searched before this?
I don't know, Mrs. McCauley admits, and Eli looks at me. It was, I recall. Nate says he was searched the first day they questioned us, his locker and his house. The police came with dogs and everything, looking for drugs. They didn't find any, I add hastily, with a sideways glance at my mother, before I turn back to Eli. But nobody found Simon's things or a computer then.
Is your house typically locked? Eli asks Mrs. McCauley.
It's never locked, she replies. I don't think the door even has a lock anymore.
Huh,
Eli mutters, scribbling on his pad again. There's something else, Mrs. McCauley says, and her voice wavers. The district attorney wants Nate moved to a regular prison. They're saying he's too dangerous to be in a juvenile center. A chasm cracks open in my chest as Eli sits bolt upright. It's the first time he's dropped his impartial lawyer mask and shown some emotion, and the horror on his face terrifies me.
Oh, no, 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 no. That would be a fucking disaster. Excuse my language. What's his lawyer doing to stop that?
We haven't met him yet. Mrs. McCauley sounds near tears. Someone's been appointed, but they haven't been in touch. Eli drops his pen with a frustrated grunt.
Possession of Simon's things isn't great, not great at all. People have been convicted on less. But the way they got this evidence, I don't like it. Anonymous tips, things that weren't there before, conveniently showing up now, in places that aren't hard to access. Combination locks are easy to pick, and if the DA's talking about sending Nate to federal prison at age 17, any lawyer worth a damn should be blocking the hell out of that.
He rubs a hand across his face and scowls at me.
Damn it, Bronwyn, this is your fault.
Everything Eli's been saying has been making me more and more sick, except this. Now I'm just confused. What did I do? I protest.
You brought this case to my attention, and now I have to take it, and I do not have time. But whatever. That's assuming you're open to a change in counsel, Mrs. McCauley.
Oh, thank God. The relief surging through me makes me limp and almost dizzy. Mrs. McCauley nods vigorously, and Eli sighs. I can help, I say eagerly. We've been looking into... I'm about to tell Eli about the red Camaro, but he holds his hand out with a forbidding expression.
Stop right there, Bronwyn. If I'm going to represent Nate, I can't speak with other represented people in this case. It could get me disbarred and put you at risk of implication. In fact, I need you and your mother to leave so I can work out some details with Mrs. McCauley.
But I look helplessly at my mother, who's nodding and getting to her feet, securing her handbag over her shoulder with an air of finality. He's right, Bronwyn. You need to leave things with Mr. Kleinfelter and Mrs. McCauley now. Her expression softens as she meets Mrs. McCauley's eyes. I wish you the best of luck with all this. Thank you, Mrs. McCauley says. And thank you, Bronwyn. I should feel good. Mission accomplished. But I don't. Eli doesn't know half of what we do. And now, how am I supposed to tell him?
Addie. Monday, November 5th, 6:30 p.m. By Monday, things have gotten oddly normal. Well, new normal. Numal? Anyway, my point is, when I sit down to dinner with my mother and Ashton, the driveway is free of news vans and my lawyer doesn't call once. Mom deposits a couple of heated-up Trader Joe's dinners in front of Ashton and me, then sits between us with a cloudy glass of yellow-brown beverage. I'm not eating, she announces, even though we didn't ask. I'm cleansing. Ashton wrinkles her nose. Ugh, Mom, that's not that lemonade with a maple syrup and cayenne pepper, is it? That's so gross. You can't argue with results, Mom says, taking a long sip. She presses a napkin to her overly plumped lips, and I take in her stiff blonde hair, red lacquered nails, and the skin-tight dress she put on for a typical Monday. Is that me in 25 years? The thought makes me even less hungry than I was a minute ago. Ashton turns on the news, and we watch coverage of Nate's arrest, including an interview with Eli Klinefelter. Handsome boy, Mom notes, when Nate's mugshot appears on the screen. Shame he turned out to be a murderer. I push my half-eaten tray away. There's no point in suggesting that the police might be wrong. Mom's just happy the lawyer bills are almost over. The doorbell rings, and Ashton folds her napkin next to her plate. I'll see who it is. She calls my name a few seconds later, and my mother shoots me a surprised look. Nobody's come to the door in weeks, unless they wanted to interview me, and my sister always chases those away. Mom follows me into the living room as Ashton pulls the door open to let TJ enter. Hey. I blink at him in surprise. What are you doing here?
Your history book ended up in my backpack after Earth Science. This is yours, right?
TJ hands a thick gray textbook to me. We've been lab partners since the first rock sorting, and it's usually a bright spot in my day. Oh, yeah, thanks. But you could have given it to me tomorrow.
We have that quiz, though.
Right. No point in telling him I've pretty much given up on academics for the semester. How'd you know where I live?
School directory.
Mom's staring at TJ like he's dessert, and he meets her eyes with a polite smile.
Hi, I'm TJ Forster. I go to school with Addie.
She simpers and shakes his hand, taking in his dimples and football jacket. He's almost a dark-skinned, crooked-nosed version of Jake. His name doesn't register with her, but Ashton exhales a soft breath behind me. I've got to get TJ out of here before Mom puts two and two together. Well, thanks again. I'd better go study. See you tomorrow.
Do you want to study together for a while?
TJ asks. I hesitate. I like TJ. I really do. But spending time together outside school isn't a step I'm ready to take. I can't, because of other stuff. I practically shove him out the door, and when I turn back inside, Mom's face is a mixture of pity and irritation. What's wrong with you? She hisses. Being so rude to a handsome boy like that? It's not as if they're beating down your door anymore. Her eyes flicker over my purple-streaked hair. Given the way you've let yourself go, you should consider yourself lucky he wanted to spend time with you at all. God, Mom, Ashton says, but I interrupt her. I'm not looking for another boyfriend, Mom. She stares at me, like I've sprouted wings and started speaking Chinese. Why on earth not? It's been ages since you and Jake broke up. I spent more than 3 years with Jake. I could use some downtime. I say it mostly to argue, but as soon as the words come out of my mouth, I know they're true. My mother started dating when she was 14, like me, and hasn't stopped since. Even when it means going out with an immature man-boy who's too cowardly to bring her home to his parents. I don't want to be that afraid to be alone.
Don't be ridiculous. That's the last thing you need. Have a few dates with a boy like TJ, even if you're not interested, and other boys at school might see you as desirable again. You don't want to end up on a shelf, Adelaide. Some sad single girl who spends all her time with that odd group of friends you've got now. If you'd wash that nonsense out of your hair, grow it a little, and wear makeup again, you could do much better than that.
I don't need a guy to be happy, Mom.
Of course you do, she snaps. You've been miserable for the past month.
Because I was being investigated for murder, I remind her. Not because I'm single. It's not 100% true, since the main source of my misery was Jake. But it was him I wanted to be with, not just anyone. My mother shakes her head. You keep telling yourself that, Adelaide, but you're hardly college material. Now's the time to find a decent boy with a good future who's willing to take care of you. Mom, she's 17, Ashton interrupts. You can put this script on hold for at least 10 years, or forever. It's not like the whole relationship thing has worked out well for either of us. Speak for yourself, Ashton, Mom says haughtily. Justin and I are ecstatically happy. Ashton opens her mouth to say more, but my phone rings, and I hold up my finger as Bronwyn's name appears. Hey, what's up? I say. Hi. Her voice sounds thick, as if she's been crying. So, I was thinking about Nate's case, and I wanted your help with something. Could you stop by for a little while tonight? I'm going to ask Cooper, too. It beats being insulted by my mother. Sure. Text me your address. I scrape my half-eaten dinner into the garbage disposal and grab my helmet, calling goodbye to Ashton as I head out the door. It's a perfect late fall night, and the trees lining our street sway in a light breeze as I pedal past. Bronwyn's house is only about a mile from mine, but it's a completely different neighborhood. There's nothing cookie-cutter about these houses. I coast into the driveway of her huge gray Victorian, eyeing the vibrant flowers and wraparound porch with a stab of envy. It's gorgeous. But it's not just that. It looks like a home. When I ring the doorbell, Bronwyn answers with a muted, Hey. Her eyes droop with exhaustion, and her hairs come half out of its ponytail. It occurs to me that we've all had our turn getting crushed by this experience. Me when Jake dumped me, and all my friends turned against me. Cooper when he was outed, mocked, and pursued by the police. And now Bronwyn, when the guy she loves is in jail for murder. Not that she's ever said she loves Nate. It's pretty obvious, though. Come on in, Bronwyn says, pulling the door open. Cooper's here. We're downstairs. She leads me into a spacious room with overstuffed sofas and a large, flat-screen television mounted on the wall. Cooper is already sprawled in an armchair, and Maeve's sitting cross-legged in another with her laptop on the armrest between them. Bronwyn and I sink into a sofa, and I ask, How's Nate? Have you seen him? Wrong question, I guess. Bronwyn swallows once, then twice, trying to keep herself together. He doesn't want me to. His mom says he's... okay. Considering... Juvenile detention's horrible, but at least it's not prison. Yet. We all know Eli's locked in a battle to keep Nate where he is. Anyway, thanks for coming. I guess I just... Her eyes fill with tears, and Cooper and I exchange a worried glance before she blinks them back. You know, I was so glad when we all finally got together and started talking about this. I felt a lot less alone. And now I guess I'm asking for your help. I want to finish what we started. Keep putting our heads together to make sense of this.
I haven't heard anything from Louise about the car, Cooper says.
I wasn't actually thinking about that right now, but please keep checking, okay? I was more hoping we could all take another look at those Tumblr posts. I have to admit, I started ignoring them because they were freaking me out. But now the police say Nate wrote them. And I thought we should read through and note anything that's surprising, or doesn't fit with how we remember things, or just strikes us as weird. She pulls her ponytail over her shoulder as she opens her laptop. Do you mind?
Now?
Cooper asks. Maeve angles her screen so Cooper can see it. No time like the present. Bronwyn's next to me, and we start from the bottom of the Tumblr posts. I got the idea for killing Simon while watching Dateline. Nate's never struck me as a news magazine show fan, but I doubt that's the kind of insight Bronwyn's looking for. We sit in silence for a while, reading. Boredom creeps in, and I realize I've been skimming, so I go back and try to read more thoroughly.
Blah, blah. I'm so smart. Nobody knows it's me. The police don't have a clue. And so on. Hang on. This didn't happen. Cooper's reading more carefully than I am. Have you gotten to this yet? The one dated October 20th? About Detective Wheeler and the donuts? I raise my head like a cat, pricking up its ears at a distant sound. Bronwyn says, her eyes scanning the screen. Oh, yeah. That's a weird little aside, isn't it? We were never all at the police station at once. Well, maybe right after the funeral, but we didn't see or talk to each other. Usually when whoever's writing these throws in specific details, they're accurate. What are you guys looking at? I ask. Bronwyn increases the page size and points. There. Second to last line. This investigation is turning into such a cliche. The four of us even caught Detective Wheeler eating a pile of donuts in the interrogation room. A cold wave washes over me as the words enter my brain and nest there, pushing everything else out. Cooper and Bronwyn are right. That didn't happen. But I told Jake it did.
Chapter 27 Bronwyn, Tuesday, November 6th, 7:30 p.m. I'm not supposed to talk to Eli. So last night I texted Mrs. McCauley a link to the Tumblr post that Addie Cooper and I read together and told her what was weird about it. Then I waited. A frustratingly long time until I got a text back from her after school. Thank you. I've informed Eli, but he asks that you don't involve yourself further. That's all. I wanted to throw my phone across the room. I'll admit it. I spent most of last night fantasizing that Addie's bombshell would get Nate out of jail immediately. While I realize that was ridiculously naive, I still think it deserves more than a brush-off. Even though I can't wrap my brain around what it means. Because Jake Reardon? If I had to pick the most random possible person to be involved in this, it still wouldn't have been him. And involved how, exactly? Did he write the whole Tumblr, or just that one post? Did he frame Nate? Did he kill Simon? Cooper shot that down almost immediately. He couldn't have, he said Monday night. Jake was at football practice when Addie called him. He might have left, I insisted. So Cooper called Luis to confirm. Luis says no, Cooper reported. Jake was leading passing drills the whole time. I'm not sure we can hinge an entire investigation on Luis's memory, though. That boy's killed a lot of brain cells over the years. He didn't even question why Cooper was asking. Now I'm in my room with Maeve and Addie, putting dozens of colored post-its on the wall that summarize everything we know. It's very law and order, except none of it makes sense. Someone planted phones in our backpacks. Simon was poisoned during detention. Bronwyn, Nate, Cooper, Addie, and Mr. Avery were in the room. The car accident distracted us. Jake wrote at least one Tumblr post. Jake and Simon were friends once. Leah hates Simon. Aiden Wu hates Simon. Simon had a thing for Keeley. Simon had a violence-loving alter ego online. Simon was depressed. Janae seems depressed. Janae and Simon stopped being friends. My mother's voice floats up the stairs. Bronwyn, Cooper's here. Mom already loves Cooper. So much that she doesn't protest all of us getting together again, even though Robin's legal advice is to still keep our distance from one another. Hey, Cooper says, not the least bit breathless from bounding up our stairs. I can't stay long, but I got some good news. Luis thinks he might have found that car. His brother called a buddy at a repair place in Eastland and they had a red Camaro come through with fender damage a few days after Simon died. I got you the license plate and a phone number. He searches through his backpack and hands me a torn envelope with numbers scrawled across the back. I guess you can pass that along to Eli, huh? Maybe there's something there. Thanks, I say gratefully. Cooper runs his eyes over my wall. This helping? Addie sits back on her haunches with a frustrated noise. Not really. It's just a collection of random facts. Simon this, Janae that, Leah this, Jake that. Cooper frowns and crosses his arms, leaning forward for a better look at the wall. I don't get the Jake part at all. I can't believe he'd actually sit around and write that damn tumbler. I think he'd just blab to the wrong person or something. He taps a finger on the post-it with all our names on it. And I keep wondering, why us? Why'd we get dragged into this? Are we just collateral damage, like Nate said? Or is there some specific reason we're a part of this? I tilt my head at him, curious. Like what? Cooper shrugs. I don't know. Take you and Leah. It's a small thing, but what if something like that started a domino effect? Or me and... He scans the wall and settles on a post-it. Aiden Wu, maybe. He got outed for cross-dressing, and I was hiding the fact I'm gay.
But that entry was changed. I remind him.
I know, and that's weird too, isn't it? Why get rid of a perfectly good piece of gossip that's true and replace it with one that's not? I can't shake the feeling that this is personal, you know? The way that tumbler kept everything going, egging people on about us. I wish I understood why.
Addie tugs on one of her earrings. Her hand trembles. And when she speaks, her voice does, too. Things were pretty personal between me and Jake, I guess. And maybe he was jealous of you, Cooper. But Bronwyn and Nate? Why would he involve them?
Collateral damage. We've all been affected, but Nate's gotten the worst of it by far. If Jake's to blame, that doesn't make sense. But then again, none of this does. I should go, Cooper says. I'm meeting Luis.
I manage a smile. Not Chris?
Cooper's return smile is a little strained. We're still figuring things out. Anyway, let me know if the car stuff is helpful.
He leaves and Maeve gets up, crossing over to the spot near my bed that Cooper just vacated. She shuffles post-its on the wall, putting four of them into a square. Jake wrote at least one Tumblr post. Leah hates Simon. Aiden Wu hates Simon. Janae seems depressed. These are the most connected people. They've either got reason to hate Simon, or we already know they're involved in some way. Some are pretty unlikely, she taps on Aiden's name, and some have big red flags against them, she points to Jake and Janae. But nothing's clear-cut. What are we missing? We all stare at the post-its in silence. You can learn a lot about a person when you have his license plate and phone number. His address, for example, and his name. And where he goes to school. So, if you wanted to, you could hang out in the parking lot of his school before it started and wait for his red Camaro to arrive. Theoretically. Or, actually. I meant to turn the numbers Cooper gave me over to Mrs. McCauley so she could pass them along to Eli. But I kept thinking about her terse text. I've informed Eli, but he asks that you don't involve yourself further. Would Eli even take me seriously? He's the one who first mentioned the car accident as suspicious, but he's spending all his time trying to keep Nate in the juvenile detention center.
He might consider this nothing but a pesky distraction. Anyway, I'm just scoping things out. That's what I tell myself as I enter Eastland High's parking lot. They start